if you grab me like that, I'm going to suck you right in the jaw. I swear, I don't care who you are.
I'm Austin.
And I'm Cloud.
And this is...
Today's movie is Carrie. Carrie is a 1976 supernatural horror film directed by Brian De Palma, starring Sissy Spacek, John Travolta, Piper Laurie, Amy Irving, William Catt, Nancy Allen, and Betty Buckley. How about plot synopsis?
Well, a young lady named Carrie is picked on by her classmates and is over-sheltered by her religiously zealot mother. And she gets invited to the prom that she goes, but she also has psychic powers, and she uses them to kill everybody. And then her mother in the house get drugged to presumably hell.
Yeah, I guess.
They
die
the
first
house.
Anyway, so.
Yeah. That's true. She did really well for, like, being stabbed in the back.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like much compared... Because, like, you see, like, the size of, like, the knife the mom was holding. But that had to have been, like, 3 to 4 inches deep. And that's not good.
No.
Especially for as small as Carrie is. Yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't have that much deep to go. Yeah. So. Like...
And then, of course, there's, like, the stumble down the stairs. That's gonna lead to bleed out.
The violent fall down the stairs. Really, it's not even really a stumble. It's like most of it happens on her back. So it's a pretty serious fall down the stairs.
Now, one of the things that this movie really kind of pushes on us is the mother is overly religious, and everything is about religion, and like that's all it is.
She's very overly it's like to the point where it's like you're not even really religious anymore because you're like half making stuff up. You're so extreme.
Yeah.
So it's just like she'll say things and I'm like, that's not the Bible. You're making that up. I mean, even more than normal. So,
and the thing that kind of confuses me is we know how she is now, but did she, like, forget normal biology?
Well, like, no, she covers most of that at the end, because then she's talking about how she should have given it up, and then they had sex one time, but then then they stopped sinning, but then this one time he got drunk, and then it felt good, so she didn't stop
him. No, I'm talking about periods.
Well, yeah, but it's just, it doesn't matter. You just have to ignore all of it, because it's all, like, as a result of original sin, and it's bad, and you just have to deal with it because it's the punishment that everybody gets because reasons and Bible and stuff.
Yeah, but see, like, that it makes it hard to work because you know the mom has them, and the mom doesn't do anything. So it's if you can't explain, like, oh, Carrie, you did this, and now I have to punish you because you're sinning.
She has the sins of women, like, track pamphlet thing that she's just reading from. So I guess that's her version of dealing with it. Like, she just plugs it up and reads about the sin, but it's too much to talk about.
So ridiculous. She's like, shut up, mom.
Well, I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, the other thing is, like, I'm not really sure what kind of some Christian type thing she is. It's hard to tell because it's so extreme.
Yeah.
And they have very weird Jesus statues I don't understand.
Oh,
there's Weird Al Jesus is just,
yes,
like, he has arrows stuck in him, and like the hands are at different angles, and it seems like he's on a board rather than a cross. But then there's a normal, like, Da Vinci Last Supper painting.
Well, though, like, okay, so when we see that little statue, it does look like Weird Al.
It does.
It really does.
I mean, he's got, like, the 70s hair, so it's a very 70s Jesus statue,
yes,
is what it is.
But then it's just, like, at the end of the movie, it's like, oh, yeah, that was supposed to be the mom. because the mom has that hair, and the arrows are supposed to represent like all the knives that.
But Jesus wasn't shot with arrows.
No,
he got stabbed with a spear. I think it says,
but even the arm placements, yeah. Okay, you really hammed this one up.
Big time symbolism there.
Yep. Yeah, we caught that. Haha, no subtlety here.
Which, I mean, you know, Stephen King is he often has a fair amount of symbolism in his writing, although he is really against like shoehorning it or crowbarring it in. Like he talks about how when you're writing, just because you're thinking about stuff, you may find that you meant more than you thought you meant, or you did put some kind of running symbolism into what you wrote, but you should never try to put it there. Yeah. You can recognize it's there after you finish writing it all the way through the first time, and then maybe go back and add a bit here or there to tie things together a bit more and make it seem like you meant it, but you shouldn't go about just like ham-handing the symbolism, because usually that tends to be not very good to read, and it tends to lead to what's thought of as bad writing, because mm-hmm. it's ham-handed and forceful. Now, I don't know. I haven't read Carrie, so I don't know how much of what's here is there, except for just the broad strokes of it. Well, which it's mostly just broad strokes anyway. It's kind of odd how little actually happens.
Yes.
And how mostly short a space of time we actually see. I think there is a skip of time at one point, but
well, like this movie takes place over
the prom,
like,
it's like 3 days.
Yeah.
That everything takes place in.
Well, no, like the from
well,
the
I
start.
Guess it, is it though just the week of the detention? Is that like we're already that close to the prom by,
yeah, like,
by that
like
time?
This movie is only like 6 days.
Yeah.
Like that, like that's it.
6 days.
5 days left.
you know, since like God knows everything and stuff, on like the first day he was like, you know, I've only got like 5 more days to do this and then I've got to rest. So
it's like, okay, I get a vacation.
I better hurry. Lots to create. Oh, but I don't know what kind of Christian she's supposed to be. It's not Catholic.
No, it's not Southern Baptist.
It's not Southern Baptist either, but it's very not Catholic, because like the Catholics, at least if you want more religion to happen, have the right idea of let's have as many kids as possible and make sure they're all Catholic too. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't seem to be all about that. She's like, I should never have had this kid because it was a sin, and like women themselves are sin because men are sin and everything is sin, and so there will just be no more people and no reason for anyone to be religious because we're just all dead. Although I guess maybe if you just stop having people, then eventually everybody's just going to die and God and Jesus are going to look at each other and be like, you know, I guess maybe it's time to come back because there's kind of nothing happening to wait for anymore. So maybe that's what you want. I don't know.
People
maybe that's how you bring the end times. You just stop having
babies. People are
replaced
by robots, and then next thing you know, you have robot Jesus.
Robot Jesus. So you ride a robot dinosaur?
That would be awesome. A picture like Robot Prime, only like, yes, I said Robot Prime, just like with a big beard riding that T-Rex like into the city.
Are you talking about like...
like Optimus Prime from like the fourth Transformers movie? Okay.
What? Optimus Prime?
Yeah, Optimus Prime. I said Robot Prime.
Oh, I haven't seen the fourth trend. Does he have a beard in that?
No, I'm saying like if you were like to put like a Gandalf beard on like Optimus Prime.
Well, there is the other Prime in 2 that's...
that's not a Prime.
Or is it 3? No, it's 3. It's 3.
Yeah, but he didn't have a beard.
He kind of has a... it's supposed to look like a beard. He has... Right. I don't know what purpose it serves being a robot, but it's like vaguely beard shaped. It's supposed to make him look old.
I thought that was in the second movie.
Is it the second movie? Because that
was the blackbird dude. He was a blackbird. And he's like, got to get onto like the other area here.
Yeah, he kind of has a beard
just, like,
but
hook
doesn't,
you up to stuff.
Doesn't Leonard Nimoy Prime have a like some kind of something too? I can't remember.
I don't remember. But you know what they didn't have? Telekinesis.
Yeah, which
can
I was
be found in the miracle section of the library,
which exists. I mean, I would, because there's books about it. It's a, like the card cataloging the library is not making any judgment on the actual reality of things, just that someone has written a book that contains that in the title or subject matter. So
yes.
Which even the book that she reads is not all that committal about it, because it says telekinesis is said to be.
Yeah.
So it's like the Wikipedia article for Santa Claus, where they didn't want to say whether he was like real or not in case kids went and checked it on the internet. And so it says Santa Claus is in cultures said to be a mythical figure that is said to bring presents to children on Christmas. And so it's very non-committal. And so all it does is say, other people say this. We're not saying whether we say it or not, but other people say this. And so that's what the card catalog is what the book is like. Which I did wonder, because it says the next line that she doesn't read has something like, there's an and then I can't remember what the word is, but it was a word that seemed as if the rest of the sentence is very important, probably, but she just stops reading at is said to be able to do things with the mind. But you said psychic powers in the synopsis, which is not what it is, because she can't read people's minds.
It's still psychic, because you use your brain. That's what it's not telepathy.
Yeah.
Telepathy would be like reading minds. Telekinesis is the moving of physical objects. It's like when people are like, oh, what if if Professor Xavier was so good, why couldn't he just move his legs? Like, no, he doesn't move objects. He gets into your mind.
Uh-huh.
Jean Grey moves objects and can get into your mind. We watch her practice that a lot. It's some crazy shit. And then they made the third movie, and then people stopped watching.
Yeah. I mean, he almost does some like moving stuff with his mind in Logan. Stuff like vibrates nearby, at least. But I think that's just from like the force of his mind force.
Yeah, that's the force of the seizure.
Yeah. So,
everybody's dying.
Everybody's dying, yeah.
Yep.
Hey, look, John Travolta. In like a secondary character part.
Yes.
And even at this point, like there's the guy that plays
Travolta had to start somewhere.
Well, he did. I think Boy in the Plastic Bubble is before this, I'm pretty sure. Which was a TV movie, which I think was directed by Irvin Kershner, who directed Empire Strikes Back. Boy in the Plastic Bubble. But the guy that plays Tommy, right? Tommy takes her to the prom.
Yeah.
He looks vaguely like Kevin Bacon sometimes.
When he smiles, like his cheekbones and like the way his face curls up. Yes. Looks like smiling Kevin Bacon.
But,
Kevin.
Yeah, young smiling Kevin. Although we've seen young smiling Kevin Bacon recently because. Wait, which movie was it?
Friday the 13th.
That's what I thought at first. I can't remember. Like, once the show happens, it didn't. Like, I can't remember it. It's out of my head.
Stick with the names. I stick with the movies.
I have to put another show in there. So, Boy in the Plastic Bubble was 70. It was the same year, November. So it was I guess it was shot relatively concurrent with this. Although it was on TV and this was on, was a movie. This was also November. So. Hey, look at that. You saw John Travolta in a movie, and then you saw John Travolta on TV, or maybe the other way, depending on whether you saw this right when it came out or waited a couple of weeks. But even though it's young John Travolta, and it could be maybe young Kevin Bacon, except I feel like actual Kevin Bacon is distinctive enough that you don't really confuse him. You can just confuse other people with maybe being him for brief moments. But John Travolta is just so John Travolta already. Like we don't see him until like halfway through the movie, or like a third of the way through the movie. And then he just appears in a scene. We just cut into a scene and Heatwave is playing on the radio and he's just like smiling there, driving his car. And it's like, hey, look, smiling John Travolta driving a car in the 70s. Like, look at that. And it's just already him. And it's just like, hey, friends drive by and like, have a beer. And then the police drive by and he's like, oh, the beer. Cause he's just drinking a beer. Just driving down the road, just drinking a beer. Doesn't even think about it. Drinking Pabst before it was trendy. And then he's just barely in the movie. Because he's a second. I think he's like, I don't know, 8 names down in the opening credits or something. It's second here on the article, but that's because he's significant now. But I don't even, he's not even on the poster, I don't think. Oh no, he is. Yeah, but he's down a bit. And this is also Brian De Palma. Kind of early, relatively early Brian De Palma. In, like, remember when we talked about how there are actors that you think are serious, or like directors that you think are one thing and they're like actually not that thing, and they've never been that thing. We just think of them that way. Like, we think of Nolan as like serious business and mm-hmm. and like he wears suits and stuff, and so we think of him as like straightforward. And but then like almost all of his movies are either like science fiction or supernatural or comic books or something. They're just like serious versions of those things. But really, you know, it seems like, you know, Interstellar comes on, it's like, what? A space movie, but he does series. Oh wait, he just did 3 Batman movies, and before that he did a movie where like you go inside people's dreams and the world's all bendy and stuff, and then before that he did a movie where nobody, where a guy couldn't sleep and had to like remember stuff for like reasons, and it's all like trippy and out of order. And then before that, a guy just like followed other people around because he has like some weird mental disorder or something. And so there's like no normal Nolan movie, but we think of him as being serious. And then like Brian De Palma, I'm not sure really what we think of him, except for like, I guess, darkness and violence and
darkness
and stuff. Mostly violence, I guess, which is violence. The case also here.
But like, I'm gonna give some credit where credit's due. Like, when everybody's like dying and burning, and she's just standing there, just being like all chill, but her eyes are like,
whoa. Yeah.
I'm like, that's a really good scene.
Uh-huh.
Like the whole bit. Now, I know we're not really supposed to do this, but I'm gonna do it anyways. I've watched all 3 Carrie movies, and spoiler alert: the newest one is probably my favorite, just because of like. If you knew nothing, that one gives the best details. But this one has some of the best scenes in it. Oh, what do you want? I don't. No, stop. So, whenever she is having that conflict with her mom, and she's like, you know, I'm going to go.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't stop me. Like, that's a really good scene. Because you're seeing Carrie kind of standing up for herself. You know, she's, I guess you would say she's blossoming into a person instead of just a shell that looks like a person. When she is in the auditorium or gym or whatever that's supposed to be, that's on fire. Like the way that scene is constructed, you know, like they actually had to do stuff like that. So like whenever you have like the water hose and it's supposed to like be flopping around, but then it like aims and it hits a particular person.
Yeah.
But you can actually see it in frame shooting the water at that person. Like those are really good scenes. Even the, I don't want to call it an effect. It's like a stunt, but where the car almost hits Carrie and she like turns and like it, she like throws it around her and then it rolls and explodes and then it explodes again.
Yeah.
Like even that scene, like the creation for that is really good too.
The thing I think maybe the weakest thing about any of those things is that there's a sound associated with the telekinesis.
Yes.
And it's so like
jarring.
Well, no, it feels so ripped off of the Psycho shower music in just the way, because it's just like a high string, like repeated in a cadence. And it's very much like the,
yeah,
like the shower scene music from Psycho, and which also the high school is Bates High School,
mm-hmm.
and so there's a bit of at least a hinting there. I don't know if it's meant to be or not, but no, that it's jarring is fine. It should be, because it's supposed to be like, it's supposed to like tip you off to like, oh, something, you know, something bad is going to happen. Also, this sound was just bad, so maybe it is a little overplaying it.
I think because it's too high pitched. Like the way that the audio is balanced for that, I think it gets a little too high. So it's not jarring because it's effective. It's jarring because it's too loud.
I think that's a result of the time, maybe, because during this time, like this is the mid 70s. This is before Star Wars came out and like reinvented what movie sound should sound like, and then George went around saying like, "This is bad. You got to fix this. I'm going to invent THX and make you."
Yes, thank you, THX.
There was the theaters had a very difficult time with almost anything but higher frequency sounds. There was very little. There was very little bass. A lot of times they didn't have dedicated subwoofers at all until later, but you could do really good. High frequency sound because you got the big Klipschorn loaded speakers, and so high frequency was something that you could do and you could be sure that it was going to play, because if you just put like a low note that's supposed to be unsettling, probably couldn't hear it in a lot of theaters because it just wouldn't play, or it wouldn't be rumbly and deep and threatening the way that you meant it to be. So
that's kind of sad.
It is kind of sad. I mean, this whole
good thing we got Alien period.
The Alien benefits tremendously from coming after Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Many things benefit from the existence of Star Wars, and many things detriment from the existence of Star Wars, including Star Wars. So
Star Wars.
You can't have everything. I feel like they've just moved to the neighborhood or something, maybe. Because she goes over to Sue's house and is like preaching to the neighbors, and it seems like she would have done this before probably, and then later she tells Carrie that like they'll move, and then you'll never see this boy again. So is this something she does? They just move from place to place so that they can't form any association and cause sin?
I don't really know, because I feel like they have been living there, because Carrie mentions that everybody knows that,
that she's crazy.
It's not just that she's crazy. Weird. It's that the dad ran off with another woman. How would they know that if they had just moved there, kind of thing? I think it's more of just a threat to kind of get away. It's like, you're going to do what I say, where we're going to move, and then it'll happen my way anyways. Because the lady that she goes and visits, Sue's mom, like knows her from the door, and that's why she like doesn't let her in right away, and it's just like, would you like to come in here? I want to sell you this book on teenagers and sin, and like, please no, just stop. It's that unnecessary politeness. It's like, no, Mrs. White, go away. You do not have anything I want. I will pray for you.
Well, she does kind of say that right away. She says, I don't think we would be interested in that. Or that Sue would be interested in that. But then she insists.
Yeah, no.
So
I insist on an ass whooping.
But Brian De Palma, it's like you think of him from things like Scarface is what a lot of people know of him from, and Untouchables, and but then he also has just, for some reason, he directed the first Mission Impossible movie, and it's like, oh, that's an odd choice. We do get a little bit of leaning that, like, you can see that that's the same person, maybe. He doesn't use it as, perhaps, excessively as he does in the first Mission Impossible movie, but when it's necessary and when it can have an effect, he does tend to do slanted angles on things and interesting uses of lenses, and there's, like, split diopter shots, like, all over the place. And some of them are better than others. There's the one on the athletic field where the coach is way up close and the girls are running in the background, because it's just a mid focus, just grass, and it's all one element. It's just grass and sky. That being blurred as the center line is so obvious because there's nothing to hide it. That one doesn't really work that well. But then some of the interior ones, like there's one with Carrie and her mom, and then there's one, oh, where is it? It's with John Travolta, I think, but I can't remember where it actually is.
For a second there, I was going to say it's the scene where he kills the pig, but I'm like, no, but that wasn't it, though.
No. Why did she even come along? Because all she does is like seem to not want them to kill the pig, even though that's the whole reason they're there. Because he starts to hammer the pig, and she's like yelling and screaming.
No, because that was the thing, is like she wanted it done quickly, and she wanted to get out of there.
Well, yeah,
and like the dude who was talking all that hype was like, I can't do it. It's like, quit wasting time. Somebody get in there and kill you. He's like, I'll do it. And John Travolta like takes his time climbing over, which honestly, from like watching it, it's like he's not wasting any time.
No, he's not really. She needs to calm down. It just takes a moment to climb over a thing.
And then like hit a pig in the head with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
Several. I want to know how they got it in that canteen.
Well, it's not a. It's like a jerry can.
Yeah,
it's
the jerry can.
Like a gas can from a Jeep or something. I don't know. I mean, it seems like they keep pigs there. Seems like a slaughterhouse or something.
Yeah, but pigs are heavy.
Yeah, I mean, they could hoist it up onto the like one of the meat hooks or something and drain it out into the jerry can. I don't know. Huh. It does seem like a lot of work.
And then I want to know how they managed to get all that blood from the jerry can, and then they're like, okay, well, we're gonna climb up the ladder, get up high, put this bucket here, pour it in the bucket.
Not all of it,
but like not even pour it in the bucket first and then just lift the bucket up.
No, we're going to do it in the rafters.
Yeah, like we're going
to
do it.
Slosh around trying to hoist the bucket up.
That's why you got to do it. So you just lift it slowly. You don't just fucking just speed climb. Like, no, it's like we got to do it the most difficult way possible. And then we spill blood on
spilled it anyway.
Like,
so.
All over the place. Like it's on the bucket. It's just dripping off.
It's not on anything else, though, except those couple of drops that get on the flashlight. So maybe they did try that first and then it sloshed all around and then they started over and then did it up there. Because I don't know how he spilled that much on the outside of the bucket and his hands, and it's like it's everywhere, but not anywhere.
And then like they set up all the decorations, and no one realizes there's a bucket of blood.
I think it's because they were on the she was on the decoration team, because we see her climbing around decorating the things, and it does have a band around it with a couple of the decoration stars stuck to it, so. I think maybe she just got to it first decorated over it and no one noticed because who knows what's in the rafters.
Maybe. Like, it's not something that we're shown.
Yeah.
And then whenever, like, they talk about it, she's not on a ladder or anything. She's just standing on the floor.
Yeah.
Because that's whenever, like, the mouthy friend. Like,
that is, I think, actually one of those cases. This is the, like, I can't remember the line. Like, in Road to El Dorado, where he says, this is how the gods play ball. And there's like this, it's a common structural thing where at the beginning of a conversation starts one place and then you cut to multiple different locations or just another single location. And the only way that it's literally possible for it to have happened is that they started a sentence, held up their finger, made everyone keep quiet. Large amounts of time passed and then they picked back up right where they were, because that's not how people talking to each other work.
No.
And so it's almost like that, because they're both up on the ladder and they're decorating and they're talking, and then
no, it's not them.
It's not the same two?
No, like the two that are on the ladder
and the two that are on the ground are not the same.
No, because the lady that's on the ladder who's already doing this stuff, that's Tommy's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then like,
that's
like
Sue.
Like one of the friends comes up and starts asking if it's true.
Yeah.
The blonde, because like the one that's with Travolta, she's with the mouthy friend talking about it.
I just seem to maybe imply that Sue knows more than she seemed to.
Because that's the thing that kind of got me. It's like they would have had to have prepared that area right there before anybody else did anything, you know, obviously the stage.
Yeah.
Because what we see them working on
it's
up
in
on
the middle
is that the large spherical thing with the stars pulling out of it. That's what they're working on.
Which Love Among the Stars is such a lame theme for the prom.
Yeah.
Like I spent most of the prom thinking that they didn't even bother to theme it because just the stars seemed so generic. And then eventually it's on the, like, it is on the stage. There's letters on the stage, but I never saw those until after it says it on the, I think on the voting cards or somewhere it says it.
Well, we see it better whenever they're disassembling all of the band gear.
Yeah, we do. We see it on the stage there, but that's when I saw it. I didn't see it on the stage earlier. And so I just thought, which they're a pretty good band.
Yeah.
It seems like it's a,
if they are actually playing.
Yeah, well,
yes.
I mean, yeah, I don't know.
Like, that's pretty good.
But I mean, just the way that they're presented is if they're a good band, even though they're part of the school.
Well, you know, good bands started somewhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're good, more power to them.
Yeah. Well, in Back to the Future, we never see who actually gets to play at the dance. We know the Pinheads, which is Marty's band, tries out, but then they're just too darn loud, according to the principal, who is Huey Lewis. But we don't know who actually got picked, and we never see the dance.
No.
Because they never make it to the dance, because the dance is like the next day or something, and we never see the next day through all three movies. Because they come back to, he comes back to like the same day that he left, and then doesn't get to go to the next day, because then they go into the future, and then they come back from the future, and it's screwed up, and then he goes back into the past, and then back into the Old West, and then they come back, and it's still the same day, and the time machine is destroyed on the train tracks, and we never get to the next day, so we never see the dance. We know that the dance in the 50s was played by a real band, though, not from the school. Or like a real group, but this seems to like they seem to be young and of like the school type.
Well, how do you feel about their wear? Like neatly dressed are
it's
they?
It's difficult for me because I love so much about the 70s, including a lot of 70s clothes, you know, stuff that people hate, wide lapels, big ties, bell-bottom pants, bright colors, or brown colors. You know, how many shades of brown do we have? Like, more than we thought we had before the 70s. But the, like, pastel color jackets, big ruffle sleeves with lace on, like that whole, which is left over from the 60s actually, like it went from, actually what it was that was a British thing. Like if you think of the Austin Powers suit, like that wasn't that uncommon a thing during the time he's supposed to be from. And actually if you watch the one George Lazenby Bond movie, he wears basically that tuxedo that becomes the Austin Powers suit. And then it just made it to America by the 70s. And so then all of that tuxedo business is like one of the main only exceptions to 70s fashion is okay with me that there is, because it's not good. And his like Woody Allen fake tuxedo,
yes,
is like, that's pretty neat, but it, like, you still shouldn't actually wear that for a legitimate tuxedo requiring event. I will say, though, that
luckily it's only prom and he's like maybe 18. Prom. So I'll give him that. I'll give him this one. Because like, I don't like dressing up, but like, Jesus, like, I ain't going to wear that. I'll wear a real
suit.
Well,
he's not going to wear it either. Well, I mean, velvet bow ties. It's just, it's a mess.
Frills.
The frills, yeah. But my uncle, one of my uncles, I guess both of my uncles, actually, but the older of my mom's two brothers got married in, I think, 75. So the year before this. And his, like, the pictures in my grandparents' house of the, like, there's a, like, the wedding portrait of him and my aunt. Like, the blue like tuxedo with the big ruffles, it's basically that suit. Like, he basically got married in Tommy's suit from Carrie. Like, it's very, very similar. And so it, you know, it's real, you know, people actually wore this stuff back then, but everybody kind of looks askance at it now because it's not good.
Oh,
I do like their, like, the rest of their clothes, like when suddenly the movie gets very 70s in a way it has not been to that point, in the everybody gets ready for prom montage in the middle, she's trying on makeup for the first time and they're getting their tuxedos. The beginning of that scene is just like suddenly like disco guitar and like synthesizer, like wah pedal stuff starts to play. And we haven't heard anything like that up till now. And then we just see Tommy and his friends walking down the street and they've all got bell bottoms and big shirts. And it just, it's the most 70s. Like, when you picture the 70s, like, you could picture that and you, it would be perfectly fine. Like,
yes.
If that was what your idea, if what came to mind was, it's crazy 70s. Because mostly the cars aren't even, because John Travolta has like a 60s, like a, I think it's like a Challenger or a Camaro or something. We never really get a good look at it, except at the end, and then I wasn't really paying attention to it because I was watching it explode and get like weird effect stunted around her. And Tommy has this like weird Baja truck thing that I'm not sure what it is. And mostly we don't really see any, we don't really see a lot of cars actually, because we're not outside very much.
Yeah.
I guess there's some cars parked at the party, but we don't really get a good look at them. I feel like she's doing something wrong when they're sitting in the car outside the party, because she continues to talk and she should not be able to.
What do you mean?
What do you mean? What do I mean? We already talked about this. While it was happening.
Oh, that I was thinking of Carrie.
No.
And Tommy being in the car.
No, Tommy's not John Travolta.
No, that's what I was thinking though. It's like, cause I was like, oh, they're outside the prom waiting to go in. They're sitting in the car. And then it's like, but I don't remember her talking. She just kind of sat there quietly when Tommy got out to walk around.
She doesn't
like,
talk very much.
Wait a minute. Oh, you mean the blowjob where she's, I don't like Carrie. What is like, well, this?
Fine. Can we focus?
Yeah. Get back to work.
This was your idea. You started this.
Like, she gets him all mad. You stupid shit. Yeah. Whack! Told you to quit calling me that.
Yeah, lots of hitting. Like, the coach hits people commonly, and he hits her, and she hits him, and Carrie's mom hits Carrie.
Everybody's getting hit.
Everybody's getting hit.
Everybody's getting hit.
It's crazy. Carrie's mom gets hit with knives.
A like lot of knives. Way.
Which, she comes home to a candle cannon.
Yes.
Like, it is serious.
I'm surprised, like, no one's burning up. Like,
yeah, there's candles.
That's a lot of heat.
On the bed.
Yes.
That's not safe.
No.
Candles on the bed. And I don't know if, like, the candles are supposed... And they're just, like, all manner of candles.
Please stop.
So it's not, like, a whole bunch of, like... I guess she's not Catholic, so it wouldn't even be. But it's just, like, there's just no rhyme or reason to... Like, did she go out and buy a ton of candles? Or did she just have this many spare candles?
I don't know, man.
Then there's like, nothing else in the cabinets, then.
Fastest candle... purchasing trip ever. It's ridiculous.
And then it is one of those, that's another one of those when you think of this from the, like, the real, what had to happen in real life to make this happen. Like, there's that like really amazing and cool but totally impractical moment in the first Fast and Furious movie where they've bought all the parts and they're gonna start fixing up the car, and there's this long like pan over the driveway where all of the new car parts are laid out. But it makes no sense, because why would they lay out all the car parts on the driveway? It's only so that we can have this cool shot. And just, you think about Carrie's mom, like the whole time Carrie's in the prom after she's gotten done being angry with the vegetables that she's just letting sit out in the open.
Oh my God. Like, okay, so we know you're not cooking for Carrie because Carrie's at prom. But like, seriously, what, you got like all of this food just laying out. And then it's just like, it doesn't look like she's cooking at all.
No.
And it's just like, oh, and then she just turns and then she just takes a knife and just starts like randomly chopping at a carrot. I'm like, what is this supposed to convey to us? That she's crazy?
Yes, that she's just totally unhinged now.
Like, we've already established this.
No, but she was just like, she was only like a couple of inches out from the edge until now. Now she's like, Wile E. Coyote runs way off the cliff and doesn't realize there's nothing under him until the smoke clears. Like, that's where she is now. But so she finishes angrily chopping the vegetables she's leaving out in the open, and then goes and lights like 1,500 candles one at a time, just going about the house. Just, I'll put a candle here and I'll light it. I'll put a candle here and I'll light it. And she just doesn't actually physically do this. It's a goofy kind of thing to think about.
And well, you know, it kind of makes me wonder, did she like put the candles out first and then light?
I don't know.
Or did she like light the candles as she went? Like, what if she caught her sleeve or something on fire?
Then things would have been different. She's like, like Slender Man hiding behind the door there. Like, you don't notice it for most of the shot.
Well,
and then
see,
you
like,
notice it because you...
I was surprised because, like, when we see inside the house, we see the dress mannequins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, like, the thing that we're not given in this movie is that the mom's a seamstress.
I get, well, we see her sewing at one point on the sewing machine.
But, but that's really all that we get. You know, it's like, oh, Carrie made her own dress. Well, how did Carrie know how to sew? It's because her mom's a seamstress. We only get one shot of that. But they have these,
she reads the Bible and she sews, and that's it.
Yeah, that is it.
And buys candles.
And
so many
candles. And can't cut carrots. What a bitch. Damn it. So whenever she's hiding behind the door, I almost thought, that's another mannequin.
Which you're supposed to.
But it has a head.
Yeah, and dress mannequins don't.
Exactly.
Dress forms, I think they're called, not mannequins. I think mannequins are for display.
Yeah. I don't know the proper term.
Not like the woman in the drugstore.
Oh my god! So the first time I had watched this movie, the scariest part was when Carrie's trying on all this makeup, and you can tell she has no idea what she's doing. And then you see this head in the mirror behind her.
Yeah.
And then it moves,
but not until the end of the scene.
It barely moves.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a mannequin head, you have hair stylists and they practice on mannequin heads with hair in it. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's just what this is. And then it moves. And that was the freakiest thing in the movie for me, because here I am just looking at it and it's just oh my God. That's a person. Oh Lord. Okay. Carrie, get the teacher to help you with that makeup. Dear, that's terrible.
Well, it's not...
It's not her fault. Honey.
It's not her... Yeah, she doesn't know how to do things. Yeah. It was Final Destination, where, the dude just has no idea how to shave.
Yeah.
It's no one ever told them.
Just dry shave. Oh, my God.
So dry.
It's
terrible. You can put on lipstick dry.
Yeah, it
seems I feel like putting lipstick on is probably easier to figure out if you've never done it before than shaving without hurting yourself. Because lipstick at least isn't sharp.
Yes. you can put lipstick on wrong and not cut your face up.
Yeah.
So.
Unless you're the Joker.
Well, no, the face was cut prior.
He doesn't, everything he says could be true or not. We don't know. How do we know he didn't get these scars putting lipstick on one time? And you just had a bad time of it.
All I'm saying is if you put lipstick on and that destroys your face, that's not lipstick.
Yeah. I suppose not.
Reminds me of the shaver from How the Grinch Stole Christmas. It's just it's just shaking back and forth. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's a murdering tool.
See, that's the thing. Yeah. I feel like you said it's a murdering tool on the episode. I don't remember because, as I just said, the episodes go right out once they happen.
So one of the things that I'm interested in is because I know this is supposed to be a story and so we have fictional characters, but, you know, there's a limitation to how fake a character is for the sake of being a character. And so, some of the stuff that these kids do, just having, the entire female class, portion of the class, in the shower changing room, and they're all, laser focused on making fun of Carrie. And I feel like that's so much.
Well, it's pushed a little to an extreme, but not necessarily that much, because kids don't know very much. But they know how to make fun of another kid.
Well, these aren't kids. They are.
No, but I think high school is the worst because you're already struggling so much with who you think you are, which is not who you are yet. And all that's going to go away in a couple of years anyway, that everything that's different than that is either a threat or an affirmation. And so if someone else is doing slightly less well than you at anything, then being brutal to them about it can feel better to people.
Yeah, but that's under the assumption everyone's going to do that, and that's what we get in the movie. Now, what I'm saying is these people are 17, 18. There's got to be people who just don't give a shit. It's like, I don't care about Carrie. She has, I have nothing to do with her. She's not important in my life. It's just like, it's like this idea that
at that point, it's not what it is though, yeah. Because only a few of them have to care about making fun of Carrie. And then the rest of them only have to care about making fun of Carrie because the others are. And if they don't, then they'll look square too. And so like,
but squares have edges. And well, edges can be sharpened.
Well, they can be, and there's nothing wrong with being square. I'm very square, but I'm okay
very
with
round.
That. Well, you are. Yeah, I mean, I'm not like physically square. I'm less round than you for sure. But
oh, yes.
People are not square typically. So,
insert it's hip to be square.
Yeah, well, it's not, but it's okay to be square.
I mean,
but just
look,
so
what if your hips are square, that would.
Well,
Jesus Christ.
SpongeBob.
I mean, lives in the sea.
Yeah.
And I was about to say a pumpkin. Please let me die.
Pumpkin.
no, but like the principal, he keeps messing her name up.
Oh, yeah.
After
he's been
told. Like, at this point, you're not even paying attention to your teachers that you're supposed to be like over. And it's just like.
Well, I don't think he knows what's up because he's got a rack full of pipes on his desk and a pipe in his hand and he's smoking a cigarette anyway. So he can't make up his mind about anything.
That's not tobacco.
Well, I mean, he's also smoking in the principal's office, and it is 75 or whatever when this is being made. So it's not like, you know, we're a little past Mad Men kind of time. Like, there's still much smoking going on, but there's much less than there had been at a previous time. So just him persisting in the smoking inside the school is another, like, this guy just doesn't care about stuff, which a lot of this is pushed a little maybe more extreme than is realistically reasonable, but it's because it all has to be there as justification for what happens later, because we have to be okay with what Carrie does to everyone, but then also not so okay with it that we want her to survive it too, so that then we're okay and happy when she doesn't. So it's like everybody gets what they get and all of it's okay. And even though Sue survives, she's still like haunted and tortured by it. And so it would have been better had she not survived. So she's still hurt severely too. So
gets
hurt.
I think part of Sue's problem is like she wanted to help Carrie and failed.
Well, that could be. That's a little bit of an interpretation that the movie decides to make. Because having not read the book, I can't tell you what the book says, but I can tell you what Stephen King said about how he felt about having written the book, in which he says that he was never really sure what Sue's motives actually were and never really trusted whether it was positive or not.
Yeah.
So even to him, it was kind of a mystery as to whether she actually wanted to help Carrie or if she thought, even if she wasn't planning to dump pig's blood all over her, she's still going to do some Carrie type thing in front of everyone at the prom and still get made fun of anyway, or maybe not. And so it's a bit up in the air, and it was that way. I think the movie does anchor it a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, because like that's the thing is like for the scene, she discovers the pig's blood and then
and she tries to
interfere. But that would show like her being supportive of Carrie, granted, compared to having seen it and go tell somebody. And then like it's kind of like the teacher scene that she's there and like just yanking her out.
Yeah, because she's not supposed to be there. And so she doesn't even listen, which listen to other people. Like, if there's one thing that's the through line through this whole show for its entire history is problems come from people not talking to each other. Like,
or it's not communicating.
Yes.
And part of communicating,
lack of communication,
is listening.
Lack of communication is where everything comes from.
And so if you grab me like that, I'm going to suck you right in the jaw. I swear, I don't care who you are. And you getting whacked. I want to know about the house effect.
Oh, the sinking into the ground?
Yeah, like, was that, like, just a large-scale model, like, overly large? Because, like, I've seen a lot of models in my day. And models normally have a look to them where, like, the smaller they are, obviously, the more model-like they look. And this looked like if it was going to be a model, it's not a small model. Like it would have to be pretty big.
Well, it is a model. Time,
okay. Because I was going to say, like, because of what we're shown, I could understand, like, it's actually a house and they're doing like a camera movement kind of thing to show it sinking. Uh-huh. And then they just have like some dirt kind of like poof up with an actual practical effect. Because a lot of what we see would be like inside, and you could, you know, obviously that's a set, so it's easy to simulate. But then like when you actually see a house kind of like sink down, like that would have to absolutely be a model. You're not gonna get rid of a house.
Well,
like
what
that.
You can actually see a piece of what there was a different version of what it was supposed to do originally. And there, as far as anyone knows, the actual film of that version, which they did shoot some of, doesn't exist anymore. Mm. And no one can find it, at least. But what was supposed to happen was the house was going to get stoned to death with the black rocks that we see Sue see when there's like the sign in the middle of where the house used to be, the for sale mm-hmm. sign. That's why those are there, because that was what it was supposed to be originally. It was supposed to get stoned to death and buried under the rocks and beat into the ground. But then they didn't really look like rocks. They just kind of looked like rain when you actually put it on film. And then some of it didn't work. Like the mechanical stuff about it, of the effect, didn't work. And so then that's why you get it just kind of collapsing, and they just decided, well, we'll just like beat it to death and catch it on fire and like sink it into the ground anyway.
Yeah.
And so that's where we got the version that we got, even though there's that little element of what it was supposed to look like left over in the other scene. But it was a model. I don't know how big it was, but it was a model.
So did he say anything else about about this story?
Well, there is quite a bit. He talks because this was, I think it was the fourth like sort of novel length thing that he wrote, but it was the first one to actually get published. He talks about it a lot in his book about writing, which is called On Writing, which is amazing, and especially the audiobook version, because he reads it himself, and so just like him talking at all is always usually really interesting, and him reading what he wrote is even more interesting because the way that he structures what he writes is really good, and having it in his voice is good. But he does talk a lot about the original, where the idea came from was he was doing some work where he was working with another guy cleaning the locker rooms at a school, and he had never been into girls' locker rooms before because he's like, I don't know, 19 or 20 or something at that point. No, maybe it's earlier than that, because it must have been before college, I think. I can't remember. Maybe it was just after college. But and so they were there, and they have like the boxes on the wall that dispense the tampons, and he didn't know what they were. And the other guy he was working with was older and told him what they were, or what the boxes were for. And for some reason, that him not knowing and the existence of those put this idea in his head of what if a girl didn't know either the first time it happened, and then what if she started getting made fun of by the other girls, and then he sort of had that part of the idea but didn't know what to do with it. And then he was reading some stuff, because it's the 70s and all this like mind power of the mind stuff was big and happening at the time. And he was reading something, and he came across a thing about how it's sort of like the book that she reads, where it's like telekinesis is said to be this and that. And one of the things that it's said to be is that it commonly occurs in teenage girls around the time of their first period, or at least most strongly. Now, I don't know what kind of basis they have for this claim, but it's a claim that's made about it. And so then he had that after he had this other idea just sitting in his head. And so he put them together and thought, well, what if a girl didn't know it started to happen and she was scared by it to start with, and then the other kids were making fun of her for it, and then also at the same moment she's either started to realize or just started to exhibit telekinetic power, and then where could you go from that? and that's and he sat down to write the story.
She accepts it really fast.
She does. Well, I mean, she does go to the library. Yeah. And it's in a book, so it's
gotta be true.
Well, it at least might be true.
You know, as it said.
Because, it said that. And she does tell her mom, like, I'm not the only one. It's in books and stuff. So, you know, her mom's like, yeah, it's in books and it's demons. That's what's in the books. Because there's only one book. It's the Bible and all these other, like, soft-bound paper things that tell you about the sin of this and that. And he talks some more about the some of the rest of the big like particular moments. But then the most important one, I think, is that he never really knew for sure what Sue was up to, even though he wrote it. Because I think I've talked before, like the way that he writes is not it actually is a much more common idea among writers. It's the Andrew Stanton talks about it also with Pixar movies. It's the dinosaur fossil idea that like a story has like a way that it's supposed to be that already kind of pre-exists in some like weird unexplainable way, and you just have to dig it up and put it together in the right way. And so just because like he wrote the story, but all he did was dig out the bones that made up the story, and maybe there was a bone somewhere that explained what Sue was up to, or maybe it wasn't, and either way he doesn't have access to it. So he could make something up, but it wouldn't be true to the way that he feels about writing, and it wouldn't necessarily be true in the case of the story because it's not where the rest of the story came from. Because he doesn't know where the story came from. It just came to him.
But it also kind of makes me wonder, like, why the overuse of the... Well, no, I say overuse. That's not right. It's the whole thing where it's like, at the end, it looks like they both went to hell.
Yeah.
But why? You know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, as I'm watching this,
I don't think that part is in the book.
Yeah.
I mean, there's much more. The book is only like 190 something pages long. It's a short book. It's big enough to count as a novel, but it's still short, and it's especially short for Stephen King, even in this earlier period. Even things like The Shining, which is only like two books later, or two or three books later. In the Dead Zone, or in the like low 300s or mid 300 pages, I think. But there's much more her going place to place, exacting revenge on people with the power, rather than like the three main moments that we get in the movie version of it. So it's way stripped down in the movie, I think, from the way that the book is. And I don't know if it's quite... I mean, the end is still the prom. That's still, like, the key scene in yeah. basically every version of it, including the book. But I don't know about the going to hell thing. Which someone is really a dick, because, like, Carrie is... I know all of this stuff has happened and it's bad, but then... Carrie is dead. The lot where the house was is empty. There's a for sale sign, and they still have to like tease and bully about it, because then they still have to like write on the sign telling her to go to hell. Which I know it's in a dream, so it's not real. Yeah. But
well, like,
but Sue seems to be
like,
fairly accepting.
Like
of
at
it.
This point, who's left to say Carrie White?
I don't think it's just Sue. Like everyone, the fire department's on the way, but that's assuming they can get the doors open.
Yeah.
I mean, not everybody went to prom, I guess, because you had to have a date, which is an odd rule that I don't know if I think is that common.
Well, I don't know. It's like, I guess, like the differences between the movie and the book would help explain things better.
Maybe.
But it's like,
well,
it's
like, the, it's I mean, like, the books don't count, yeah. but I like to talk about it because
like,
I happen to know
like
something
the
about
idea
the writing
for Tommy.
Of it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, Tommy didn't do anything bad to her, and
but she didn't kill him though. No. He got knocked out by the can, and then she just like walks out with it on fire, and she's kind of in shock and trauma, and she's not really thinking about anything. So he dies accidentally.
Yeah, it's
so she doesn't
sad.
Mean to kill him. Yeah, it is. It is sad because he didn't really do anything. Because he was actually being legitimately nice. He's the only nice person in the movie, even though he was going out with Sue Snell. They're dancing and they're talking and he's being kind, and he doesn't actually know, like, he started doing it because Sue told him to, but then he doesn't know that there's any plan behind that or anything. which maybe Sue doesn't either, but he seems to be much... I feel like this is the kind of case where they're together in high school because they're both popular kids, and they might be like this, you know, the Brendan Eddy from Scenes from an Italian Restaurant, the Billy Joel song, and like they think that they're going to be together, and then they try it like right after high school, and they're only together for a little while, and then they can't, like, they don't work together at all outside the high school environment. I think Tommy is way too nice to continue associating with Sue when they're not in the pressure cooker of high school, because he seems to be a much nicer person than she does.
Well, like, we don't really see Sue do anything else, though. Because, like, Sue is the one person who gets, like, pushed to the side while everybody else is laughing at Carrie in the shower.
Yeah.
She's the one that pulls Tommy away from the training. Like, I want you to take Carrie to prom. We see him at the counselor's office or whatever that's supposed to be when they're talking to the teacher, and the teacher's like, don't you be picking on Carrie.
Yeah.
And then, like, we don't really see her, like, again, except for the scene where she's on the ladder. It's like, yep, everything you heard is true. He's taking her because I'm not going.
Yeah.
And then we see her leave to go to the prom to check up on him. So if there was a plan, we don't even know about it.
Yeah.
Because, like, nobody else but her, because she's not even talking to anyone.
No,
like I guess that's because that's
she's
the thing
in
is
the
like
friend group kind of.
But it's like she's there, she exists. We know she does associate, but for the movie's sake, we see her. We don't ever see her associate with anybody, and then nothing ever does come out of it other than her getting kicked out of the auditorium, and then everybody burns to death. But well, then the people who we do see do bad stuff to them, they don't burn in the auditorium, but they do get exploded in the car.
I mean, it may be that even though she's still, like, she has to be haunted by it, I guess she could eventually get over it, maybe, that she's the only one that there was any hope for, really, because she's the only one that wasn't super mean in, like, an irredeemable way, and so that's why she's the one that gets to survive, because she's actually worth saving, maybe,
yeah,
if she tries to be.
I also don't understand the teacher laughing at the blood drop thing, because that seemed out
well,
of character.
Everyone
inside has to die, but it is.
Well, no. I mean, just everyone is less nice than they even sometimes if they put on they're nice. Maybe they're not as nice as that.
Because, like, I don't know. It's like I have issues with when they try to, like, falsify actions for a character just for a scene. And everybody else
it does
like,
seem a little out of character. Yeah, she's been nice to at least sort of.
Well, she's been like really stern and like things are not funny unless we're trying to help somebody kind of thing. And, you know, it's just like, oh, yeah, this thing just poured blood all over her. And it's like I'm like,
now, it's in slow motion.
Yeah.
For a very long time. So it may be that was just a
leftover.
Well, no, just a brief reaction where just like something extreme happens. A natural reaction for most people would just be to laugh at it because it was unexpected. And then she would realize, wait, this is actually not good. And she would stop it. But it just doesn't get to go on long enough because it's such a short period of time stretched out into what feels like a long period of time. So she probably wouldn't have laughed as long as everyone else if she was going to be in character with the way her character had been.
Yeah, I can stand
with
that.
But it's just what we see. Now, that she does it at all is a problem because I wouldn't do it at all. Because it wouldn't be funny. But she might. I don't know. I mean, the only thing that Sue does that's at least not sort of model student person... if nothing more beyond that is that she doesn't put up with the punishment, really. Like, she's angry with everyone else about the punishment, but I guess since she didn't really do anything as much as the rest of them did, then maybe that's okay, because she's kind of being punished unfairly because she didn't participate as much.
Yeah,
but she doesn't say that. She doesn't defend herself that way. She just says that she doesn't like it and she's not going to put up with it. she's not gonna go. And so it's the only thing. But then that's still probably just her trying to fit in. Sue does kind of seem to be accidentally a popular kid more than some of the rest of them.
Yeah.
And maybe she wasn't even. Maybe she's only a popular kid because she's going out with Tommy, who's in the newspaper for being like a sports star or whatever. That, I guess, well, maybe newspapers are sin too. They probably are. And Carrie probably snuck it in because she has the Tommy's newspaper clipping next to her mirror when she's getting ready. Which the mom says, "I knew it would be red." And she says, "It's pink, Mom." But it's so light pink, it might as well not be pink. So, yeah. And it's for sure not red. No, but what I was trying to say, it's not, I wasn't trying to say there was justification. I couldn't dig for it fast enough. What I was trying to say was,
the people are just dicks.
Yeah, like, people are just why. Dicks.
That's why.
They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you!
You can't laugh if you're dead.
That's true.
And your screams of pain filled me with joy. Building on fire.
Oh my God, save us! No one can save you now.
So how do you feel about stars?
4. It's almost 5. It's almost 5. I mean, it's almost 5. But if this one's 4.
Huh. Now, is this because you're comparing it to the later one?
Almost. Almost.
That's not fair. It's almost. We compare things, even though we do compare things. What does that mean, almost?
Almost. It's difficult to explain because I actually saw the newest Carrie first, and I'm like, hey, this is pretty good. And I watched, like, everything right after that point because I wanted to compare them since I knew it's based off of a book, and I didn't read the book, so I wanted to make sure I got all the movies in before I was going to read the book. And then I picked the order of which I had liked them, and the second one is not up there. It is not. But yeah, it's gonna get 4.
I think I'll have to say 4 also. I can't explain exactly why, because I do think that it's really good and most of it's really effective. Not sure. There's just something about it where I feel like it could be, maybe it's the like stripped down feeling to it where just such a little amount happens. Like it feels like there must be more than this. There could be more story than this. And there isn't. I don't know. It might not be that at all. But there's something. This is not because the new one is better, because I haven't seen the others. So I can't compare it. I don't know. What about scariness?
2.
How scary was Storm of the Century? I can't remember what the numbers were.
Not high enough. No, wait. Not low enough? It's not scary.
No.
Like most of these movies just aren't scary.
No.
Like, no matter how horrifying you try to make these movies, like, oh, you gotta watch it in a dark room, and all this, and like, I'm just saying.
Alfred Hitchcock's stories to read with the lights on.
It's like, it's not. Stop.
Well, it's unfortunately not, which is unexpected for me, because generally, like, mind powers and stuff, like, really creep me out. You know, like Siler and Heroes is like a big problem for me, and various other things. Why is it 2?
For the mannequin head.
Oh, so not like a real thing, just a misinterpretation.
It's kind of just
it's
me
experientially
having, like,
yours. Yeah, it's not like it's not a deliberate thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why she doesn't move more. She's like, being real weird, but
it's like it's extremely accidental.
Yeah.
And I will never forgive myself for that first view.
Actually, I think maybe the I'm going to give it 3 for the little bit that the mind powers did creep me out, and then like the rest of it for like extreme religiousness being frightening. So.
Okay. So I can understand like the 70s, this probably wouldn't get reported. But you're gonna tell me like in this, because it looks like
just
this
keeping
is,
her in a closet. And
like,
stuff.
Like this place is a nice looking neighborhood. That's what it looks like. And you telling me there's not at least one neighbor who is nosy and gonna be poking all in that business?
I guess not.
You telling me that someone's not looking at Carrie and seeing if there's bruises and shit because her mom's a fucking psycho?
Yeah.
Like,
what is it the description said? A psychotically religious mother? Is that what it said? Yeah, something like that?
Yes. Like, she crazy.
Yeah.
And she not even crazy for Jesus.
No,
she's
just crazy. Like, she's
just crazy.
She thinks she's crazy for Jesus, but she's in fact just crazy. So,
because there's no praising the Lord in this. It's all about, it's one of those hellfire and brimstone.
It's not even
creatures.
That. Like, it's beyond that. It's crazy.
It's the sin. It's the sin.
Say it!
But what about, like, cos and the third one that's the mathematical formula thingy? I don't remember.
Pan. I didn't even remember cos. That's all we have to say about Carrie. We'll see you next time.
Later.